This is the Inch Podcast, a production of InsideCollegeHockey.com. Now, let's send it to our podcast host, Joe Gladyszewski.
This is the Inch Podcast, recorded July 1st, 2009. Of course, Canada Day. Happy belated Canada Day to our Canadian listeners, and of course, a happy Independence Day weekend here in the United States to everyone as we record our second Inch Summer Podcast. My name is Joe Gladyszewski, joined by our distinguished panel of, we'll start in the WCHA with Jess Myers. Hello, Jess.
Hi, guys. To celebrate Canada Day, British Columbia native Justin Morneau got hurt today, so I'm a little depressed on Canada Day.
Ooh, tough bounce for the Twins.
Not good. Not good at all.
Not good at all. James V. Dowd from the CCHA, senior writer. Hello, James.
How are you, Joe?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm very good. Waiting for my trip to the Stanley Cup Finals, although I know it'll end poorly.
Yes, Blackhawks season ticket holders have acquired the HOSA curse. We'll talk a little bit NHL free agency later on in the podcast as well. And, of course, also joining us tonight, Inch columnist and editor Mike Eidelbus. Hello, Bus.
Happy Canada Day, everyone. Although by the time we get this podcast down on the computer or whatever we're recording it on, it's going to be Labor Day, but I digress.
That's Labor Day, L-A-B-O-U-R.
That's right.
That's right. All right, let's start with the big news in college hockey from the last week or so, and that, of course, is Nebraska-Omaha leaving the CCHA and Bemidji State leaving College Hockey America to join the WCHA. Jess, you know, you were obviously closest, I guess, in proximity to the story and talked to a lot of folks out there last week when the news broke. After the dust has settled, what are your impressions?
Well, it wasn't a big surprise to everybody, but the general feeling is it's the right move. The thing I thought, and I asked Bruce McLeod about this, you know, it's pretty well known that a dozen years ago, Omaha wanted into the WCHA and was kind of given the stiff arm, and, you know, maybe would have saved themselves a lot of trouble if they just would have let him in then. But it makes sense from a lot of reasons, you know, geographics and the quality of programs, and, you know, good move.
Yeah, I think it's an exciting time for the conference and for those two programs in particular. You know, that they're going to have an opportunity to compete, and it's not going to be easy. You know, they've got to deal with a lot of big-time perennial powerhouse programs out there in the WCHA, but I think both programs are equipped to take on those challenges. You know, you've got a new coach at Nebraska-Omaha, and Dean Blaze, obviously very familiar with the WCHA from his time with North Dakota. You've got a new rink going up in Bemidji State and a lot of excitement, and obviously geographically should be able to draw a lot of players from that recruiting area where the WCHA generally cultivates its talent, you know, in the United States Hockey League and places like that. So I think it's a good fit for the programs in the sense that they can be successful, even though it will be a tough challenge.
I think it'd be kind of fun if Omaha won the CCHA this next season, their final year. Kind of go out on a high note. Any chance at all?
Yeah, James, any chance of that happening?
You know, they're one of those teams that it could happen with, you know, the regular season title. I think it'll be tough. Miami returns a lot of guys, you know, Michigan's that, and really, you know, Omaha was decent in the first half of last year, but just struggled in the second half. But good coach like that, come playoff time, never know what's going to happen.
You know, thinking about the switch and, you know, from a CCHA standpoint, obviously, you know, the league feels like Nebraska-Omaha done them wrong by jumping ship to the WCHA. But, I mean, Nebraska-Omaha really was not a very good fit for the CCHA. Yeah, they brought a lot to the table early when they were a young program and selling out the building every season.
That was the smaller building, though, remember?
That was the smaller building.
Civic Auditorium or whatever it was called.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, that place rocked, though, when it was full. I went to sellout games there. It was awesome.
It did. And, you know, there was a lot of enthusiasm early on, obviously. And, you know, there's still a good fan base there, but it waned a little bit. But, you know, this is I understand the CCHA for feeling the way they do. But really, this is a much better fit for Nebraska-Omaha. You know, not only do they get, into a league that's a little bit or a lot more, conducive for them geographically, but also, Omaha's got some history with some of those teams, not from a hockey standpoint, but from their other sports being a Division II school. As they were, I think they're actually 1AA now. They might be Division II still and everything else, but they were in a conference. And Jess, correct me if I'm wrong. They were with St. Cloud State in a conference. Mankato,
St. Cloud State, Minnesota State, North Dakota, Minnesota Duluth for a couple years. That conference has since gone away, but there were some rivalries there.
Yeah, and there's some familiarity there. So I think from that standpoint as well, for that fan base. What does somebody in Omaha know about Ferris State? Not a whole lot. Or what connection do they have to Northern Michigan? Well, really nothing. But, now there are some kind of reigniting some or rekindling some old rivalries. And I think that's going to help them in the long run, too.
Yeah, that is a good fit from that standpoint. And just, as you mentioned at the start of your comments, when this went down, when Nebraska-Omaha came on the scene and moved into Division I hockey, that was kind of what I was always wondering at the time is like – and I think even in their elevation of their program up into Division I hockey, they postured themselves to be a WCHA team. They played those teams out of the league. They kind of just – it seemed like that was the right place, and then they ended up in the CCHA. So.
Well, and it was just a matter of bad timing, too. I mean, Minnesota State had just come on board at the time they were Mankato State, giving the league 10 teams again. And it, just like this go-around, 11 years later, you couldn't go to 11. And there wasn't an obvious 12th team to add. So there was just really not a place in the league for another team at that time.
Right. Speaking of bad timing... let's look at the CCHA side of this now. After next season, of course, the CCHA, as it currently stands, will have 11 members. Of course, there will be one team left kind of out in the middle of nowhere, which is Alabama Huntsville, with Bemidji State leaving College Hockey America, as well as Niagara and Robert Morris, who will be joining Atlantic Hockey. So now the CCHA is in a position where they've got to get to 12. They don't have to get to 12. They could get to 12. Alabama Huntsville's, the free agent, so to speak. But as you said prior to recording, what is Wayne State thinking right now?
Yeah, how's that Wayne State athletic department feeling about dropping hockey right about now? Probably not too good, because it would have been a layup for them to get into the. Or an empty netter, I should say. I don't want to mix my metaphors.
Exactly.
To get into the CCHA, and I think it's pretty much inevitable that Huntsville ends up in the CCHA. I mean, there's one team left, kind of out there on the island, and the CCHA has this spot to fill. Unless something, I can't imagine a scenario. Where another team would bolt and join the CCHA from another league, but
well, what about this? Bowling Green's going to reevaluate their program after this next year.
Well, there's that, yeah. But still, I think that reprieve. And we probably should put the Bowling Green issue aside for a moment. But,
yeah, let's get back to.
But I think Bowling Green's going to hang around. I think they're going to rally around that program. There's enough influential alumni there to keep that thing moving forward, or get that thing moving forward, I should say. And we've kind of discussed Huntsville before a little bit, but I don't think the CCHA is necessarily a bad fit, somebody pointed out someplace, and I wish I could remember where I read it. Huntsville really isn't. From a distance for travel wise isn't any different from going to Omaha. In fact, it's a little bit closer, I think, to some of the cities, especially you look at the Miami Bowling Green. It's a little bit closer. The Ohio State. The other thing I think that might be a good thing for the CCHA is I think some of those schools, especially, you think about it, Alabama, the first love there being football. And Huntsville, I think, is pretty, from what I've heard from people, a pretty good hockey town. But, you get in the CCHA, you bring in an Ohio State, you bring in a Michigan, you bring in a Notre Dame, you bring in a Michigan State, you bring in Miami, teams that the sports fan in that area, they're going to know these names from college football.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be good. It would be good for attendance. And I think that at least initially, the first couple of years or so, you're going to get some a spike, around that program.
You saw that in Omaha. Look at what after the initial thing wore off. Who were the teams that continued to draw there? If you go back and look at their attendance numbers, it was Michigan, it was Michigan State, who are good, solid college hockey programs, but also in Nebraska, that's a football state as well. And so I think you've seen that model work. I agree with you there.
Yeah, I think it does make good sense for the CCHA. At the same time, if the membership of the league and the league office deems that it's not a good fit, they look, they're kind of put in a bad spot by this whole thing.
Yeah, they are put in a bad spot. And the other thing too is, from the commissioner's standpoint, not specifically Tom Anastas, but all the commissioners, there's this, kind of underlying theme of continuing to grow the game of college hockey, and to have that, hanging over the game, collectively hanging over the game of college hockey, to keep growing it, and then not to let Alabama Huntsville in when you've got an opening, that's a real tough spot.
Yeah, it is. One thing that Alabama Huntsville has going for it is that they are technically the host school for the 2012 Frozen Four in Tampa. So you're going to get some exposure, whichever league they're in at that time, assuming all the best and that the program is viable and sustained and all that stuff. But, you're going to have that logo on the ice at the Frozen Four in Tampa. So you're getting some kind of exposure and reward in that sense, and it's just another little thing.
I just ran the numbers geographically. The distance between Huntsville, Alabama, and Oxford, Ohio, is exactly the same as the distance between St. Cloud, Minnesota, and Omaha, Nebraska. So there's a fit there.
Yeah.
About six hours by bus. You could do it. They do love those buses in the CCHA.
Just to throw one more wrench in that conversation about Huntsville and fits for the CCHA, and Jess, you may know more about this than I do. I've heard some rumblings about Moorhead, Minnesota State, looking to start a program. Now, if they started a program, would they go to the WCHA, and then would there be a possibility of Tech coming to the CCHA?
Oh, boy, don't ever mention that to anyone from Michigan Tech. They hate that talk. I put that in a notebook this year, and I got an email almost immediately from Jamie Russell. They want no part of the CCHA and don't even like to talk about it. Minnesota State Moorhead, which is right across the river from Fargo, North Dakota, made a little noise a couple months ago about wanting to start a Division I hockey program. It was not really taken that seriously, to be honest. And Bruce McLeod and WCHA types, when you ask them about it, they say, it's not like you could start up a program from scratch and immediately have them in the WCHA. So, best of luck starting up a program. If you get something going, come talk to us and we'll look at it. But I don't see that as being anything that the WCHA would consider in the near future.
All right. Any other thoughts on those moves and potential moves and future posturing?
Penn State. Still waiting for it.
I think you can wait a little bit longer.
Keep waiting.
Yeah. I got a feeling in today's economic climate that there's not going to be a huge rush of colleges, you know, looking to throw millions of dollars into hockey.
Yeah, Penn State is tied with Syracuse right now.
And we all know your feelings on Syracuse. You made that clear.
I don't think it works for college hockey.
Okay.
That's the bottom line. Well, let's talk about some coaching moves, changes. One prominent job that's open isn't so much a head coach position, but longtime Boston University wingman to Jack Parker, associate head coach David Quinn, signed on to coach the Lake Erie Monsters, which are the Colorado Avalanche affiliate of the American Hockey League. So there's a pretty prominent spot open at BU. Also, Minnesota has a full-time position that they may be working Grant Pitolny toward. Mike Hastings, of course, left Don Lucia's staff at Minnesota and joined on at Nebraska Omaha with Dean Blaze. And Grant Pitolny was named as a volunteer assistant coach right in the same time frame for the Gophers, and he may be kind of heading into that, maybe toward a full-time position. We'll see how that develops. And, of course, Bowling Green with Scott Pollock leaving the program to join USA Hockey. They've got two assistant coach positions open as well. So you've got that situation there. We'll have to see some of those, you know, changes as they come about over the next several weeks. And, of course, Bowling Green promoted Dennis Williams, who was an assistant on Pollock's staff and a former Bowling Green player, as interim head coach for the 2009-10 season.
Was that a move that they had to make? I mean, were you going to find somebody to come in and take that job, knowing the uncertain future there? James, any thoughts?
Yeah, you know, I think it just made a lot of sense, especially coming, you know, later in the summer. It seemed like maybe something they'd been done some research into, and they couldn't, you know, there weren't any possibilities jumping out because of that, and that's why the, you know, the move came when it did, and why it was internal, I think. So, I would agree with that.
And I think in the short term too, it's not, you know, it's not a bad move. On the part of Bowling Green. I mean, obviously their program is in limbo, and you know, Dennis Williams has, although he's a relatively, I think, recent grad of Bowling Green. I want to say, you know, I'm going off the top of my head here, I want to say maybe 2001 or 2002 is when his playing career ended. 01.
Yep.
You know, he's got some head coaching experience at the Division III level, and he's been there for a couple of years at Bowling Green. So, you know, it's not like he's not a greenhorn. I mean, it was going to be a difficult year this year, regardless of who was coaching. I mean, Scotty Bowman could be coaching. It's still going to be a tough year for Bowling Green with all the questions swirling around this program. But, you know, I think from a stability standpoint, obviously this move made sense. And, you know, depending on where the direction of the program is, as we move on through the hockey season, you know, maybe he's the right guy for the job. Who knows? But some resources there.
Yeah, they can
at Bowling Green that they can, and I think they're going to start tapping into those. You know, this 1 year reprieve is really going to get that alumni base, and obviously we've talked numerous times about the alumni who have you know, with ties to Bowling Green hockey. You know, I think this gives them some time to get organized and really rally around that program.
Yeah, and I'm not 100% certain that all the alumni, especially the power players among the alumni groups, were entirely confident in the program's direction under Pollock. So the way that it all worked out might also help Bowling Green in terms of alumni relations. So that is another positive step in that vein.
Were you going to make a point about Williams?
Yeah, Williams he went to a Newman program at the Division III college level that was on difficult times and actually faced some of the same challenges that Bowling Green faces in terms of they're in a league with some pretty established elite Division III programs like, you know, RIT and Elmira. And then they really improved each of his years there. He was 17-5-5. He was a three-year head coach. And they had won, I think, five or six games total the year before he took the job. And then, of course, he spent 2 years as Division I assistant after his tenure at Newman. But this past spring, Newman won the Division III national championship. And that senior class would have been a class that Williams recruited and developed. So that's that similarity, I think Williams is prepared for this particular task and as a relatively young guy, especially by head coaching standards, I think his energy and enthusiasm and being at his alma mater should also be very good fits for him and for the Falcons.
Where's Newman located, Gladdy?
It's outside of Philly a little bit.
Okay. All right. Just curious.
Yep.
Hadn't heard of it before. But.
Yep. They're a little outside of Philly.
We don't get out much here.
And I'm proud of you, Jess, for taking an interest in a college hockey team east of Detroit.
I love all college hockey teams named after Seinfeld characters.
That's right. Kramer A&M will be on the rise in the next year.
That's right. Good stuff.
Look out for Banya State.
Kenny Banya. Yeah, they had a tough season opener with Putty.
Got to support the team.
Is that a euphemism?
Got to support. Eight ball.
Speaking of coaching openings, anything happening at Brown?
Not yet. It's been pretty quiet. They haven't even really announced finalists for that position. Some names have been rumored. One that I think actually has a lot makes a lot of sense to me is the name Brendan Wittitt. He's an assistant on Bob Gaudette's staff at Dartmouth. He played for Gaudette at Brown, as many people know. Bob Gaudette coached Brown before he coached Dartmouth. And Wittitt's a 94 a 94 Brown graduate. So he's, again, trending toward the younger type guy at his alma mater. There's interest there. So that name to me is one to watch. We'll see what happens. Another assistant position open, Sean McCann, longtime Harvard assistant and, of course, Harvard player, left Ted Donato's staff at Harvard to hit the prep ranks as a head coach. So he's moved on from Harvard, and they are working toward filling that position as well.
Going back to David Quinn taking the AHL job with Lake Erie Monsters, I think BU probably has more talent than Lake Erie had.
I think they do.
That was a pretty sorry team, I think, last year. The Avalanche system is bereft of talent. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Got a little richer on Friday. I like Duchesne.
Yeah, he's a good player. I don't think he's going to play much American Hockey League in his career.
So. What I thought was cool with him, though, was I don't know if you saw the montage of his bedroom when he was a kid. Like, actually,
yeah, that was pretty wild. That was pretty wild.
That sounds like a segue.
Yeah, it is a segue. Let's talk NHL draft. Kind of a slow start to the draft in terms of a college standpoint. The first collegiate player taken wasn't until 16th overall, when Minnesota kind of went off the board. And Jess, I guess you might be able to best speak about this. Nick Leddy was taken by the Minnesota Wild. He's a Eden Prairie high school kid, was Mr. Hockey in the state of Minnesota, and will be a Minnesota Golden Gopher when he plays college hockey. So tell us about him a little bit. It sounded somewhat Aaron Ness-ish.
Yeah, that's a good comparison, although he's got a lot more size than Ness. Right. Same kind of offensive tendencies. Just had a great prep career. Like you said, Mr. Hockey, and led his team to the state championship this past year, which, you know, as we've detailed before, it's a pretty big deal around here. It was interesting, the talk before the draft among the provincial types in Minnesota. Boy, can we get a Minnesotan? Can we get Jordan Schrader? And the thought was, well, Schrader will never be left on the board at number 12 when the Wild pick. Well, not only was he left at 12, but they traded down to 16. And then decided that they didn't like Schrader's size, apparently, and went for a little bigger kid in Leddy. Pretty similar guy, actually, to what Todd Richards was as a player at Minnesota. Kind of a hard-nosed offensive defenseman with a decent shot. So interesting comparison there that maybe Richards saw a little of himself.
Yeah, that is. But I don't know if... I find it difficult when I think of coaches affecting draft picks, because unless it's Steven Stamkos, you know, or John Tavares or someone who's going to step right in and play in the league, you're looking at a 2 to 3 year window before, you know, you're actually working with these kids. And then a lot of head coaching tenures don't last 2 or 3 years these days. So
unless you're Garth Snow, then you're looking at about an 18-month window.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens. But well, yeah, on Schrader, he slid a little bit. One thing I had read in the rumor mills was that he didn't test very well at the combine.
Okay.
On some of the IQ testing and those kinds of things. But as a bit of a fan of the Vancouver Canucks, I was pretty freaking excited when he was available at 22.
More than happy to see him slide.
Yeah, I was happy he failed the spelling bee.
And James, I got to ask, we've joked before about the Chicago Badgers. What's with all the Bulldogs they're picking all of a sudden? Have they switched their focus or what?
Yeah, seriously. I mean, I sent you that text, about sent you in the first round, and then, you know, gets the second round pick the next morning. I was just like, wait, what? I guess it's... they saw all that that playoff success this year.
Yeah. They had a bunch of Princeton guys on their list and then said, no, we got to cross them off.
Dale Talon told me one time when I talked to him, we go for winners, and I guess they see the Bulldogs as a winning program now.
There we go.
That's right. Those names,
they took Dylan Olsen.
Dylan Olsen was the first-round pick from Camrose Kodiaks. He's a Minnesota Duluth recruit. That was the first-round pick.
For 20th, now.
28th.
Yeah, for now. That's a big question in Duluth all of a sudden.
And then also Brandon Peary to Chicago, who's on his way to Rensselaer. So we'll see what happens. Then third round, 89th overall, Dan Delisle, a Minnesota Duluth recruit.
I watched Dan Delisle play this winter. He is just this lanky, like 6'5" forward. One of those guys where, you know, he winds up for a slap shot and you swear the puck is going to hit the stick is going to hit the rafters. He's got such a long stick and a long reach. So he might be a fun one to watch too.
Yeah, that's good. One guy, you know, I'm looking forward to it. He was kind of central scouting, you know, down toward the bottom of their rankings. Bound for Harvard, and I saw him play on TV in a Minnesota high school game. I really liked Marshall Everson or Evanson.
He's out of Edina, isn't he?
Yeah. I liked him. He's going to Harvard, Marshall Everson. Yeah.
Yep.
I think he'll be a good ECAC player for sure. We'll see. I don't know, who knows.
I love that Denver has a recruit named Drew Shore too. He's going to the Panthers in the second round. I just wondered how many Eddie Shore jokes he's had to hear throughout his career.
He's too young for that.
Probably Pauly Shore.
Yeah.
Pauly Shore? Yeah, maybe.
Might be too young for that too.
Dinah Shore?
Yeah. Speaking
of Harvard.
Yeah, we were going to. I was going to bring up Harvard with Louis LeBlanc.
Yeah.
Sounds like this kid's going to be something to watch.
Yeah, a lot of people are really excited about his upside. I just wonder how. I wonder, first of all, how long he'll be at Harvard. I wonder what kind of an impact he'll have. And I just, you know, of course, I'm all for elite players playing college hockey, but you're going to a place where you're going to play 32 games a year, max. That's if you make it to Albany in the playoffs. And he said, you know, on TSN, and he's a first rounder, obviously, he said during the draft coverage that he's looking to stay 1 or 2 years. So why Harvard and why college hockey if you only plan on 1 or 2 years? It's kind of a head scratcher for me.
That's a good question.
I think if you got the chops to go to Harvard, you got to go to Harvard, even if it's for a year or two, and then with the thought that you'll complete your education at some point later.
Yeah, I don't know how much that happens in a place like Harvard.
I don't know how much that happens either, but you know, he did mention it in one of those. I think it was in the TSN pre-produced piece that aired during the draft. Actually, before he was picked, he mentioned, you know, Harvard's got a pretty good reputation, and if he can get in there, he might as well go. What the heck?
Yeah.
And, you know, it kind of brings us back, too, to, you know, and obviously he didn't know this when he decided he was going to Harvard, but he ends up getting picked by the Canadiens, who obviously we've kind of developed a liking for the way they draft because they've been picking a lot of college kids lately. And it seems to be their MO is to let those guys stay in college for 2 to 3 years and –
yeah,
and they seem to be okay with letting them develop down there. So, you know, he says 1 or 2 years. Maybe it's, you know, maybe it's more like 2 or 3 years based on you know, the parent organization's wishes.
Yeah, and you know, they've had some success. I mean, you look at Komisarek, you look at Chris Higgins, these kinds of guys. You know, even Jan Denis to some extent that. But they didn't, I don't think, have the same pressures that LeBlanc will have.
Oh, yeah.
Because of the hometown tie. I mean, this is a French-Canadian kid from suburban Montreal who was a first-round pick, you know, of the Montreal Canadiens in their rink. You know? Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. We'll see what happens. And I don't know that really has an impact. It's certainly different, say, in Montreal – especially with their tradition, history, and all the great French-Canadian players they have in the history, than, say, Tim Kennedy faces in Buffalo, you know. Go ahead.
Is it true that when they say these kids can stay in college for a few years and develop, they request that they major in French?
No.
Because that wouldn't be a bad idea.
Well.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
You know, then you're prepared.
Yeah, well.
Not a very marketable degree.
Unless you're playing for the Montreal Canadiens.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So. Likewise, if you get drafted by, like, the Kings, you should major in Spanish.
Easy, Rook.
Well, I mean, a lot of folks are bilingual in Southern California.
And
likewise in South Florida, yeah.
So, we'll see. New York Rangers, Chris Kreider, BC. That might be... I'm excited to see his college career as well.
Anybody yeah. surprised that Phoenix drafted Chris Brown? They have like 6 Michigan guys in their system.
Oh, what's up with that?
Yeah, so they got Kloric, Porter, Montoya, Brown, Chris Summers.
Yeah. They love it.
In a way, that's good news for Michigan, though, because they've been pretty good about it. I mean, Montoya was a Rangers guy when he left, but, you know, Porter stayed for 4 years. Summers appears to be headed into his fourth year. So, you know, you got to think they're going to let Chris Brown develop under Berenson and buck that trend of you know, the top picks leaving. So even though he's a second round pick, not a first round.
It takes the Coyotes 4 years to raise the money to sign him.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Chris Brown bake sale immediately following Wednesday night's game against the Ducks.
Car wash.
James, with Reinsdorf getting involved to buy the Coyotes, if plan B, if it doesn't work out in the desert now, is plan B like Hoffman Estates, Illinois, that they play at like the Rosemont Horizon or someplace?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Allstate Arena, displace the Wolves.
How about Yost?
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see if Reinsdorf gets involved. He's kind of got his, he's a little bit involved in everything. A bit of baseball, a bit of basketball.
He's got some stuff going on. 6 St. Cloud State recruits, Jess, taken.
Michael Lee, remember that name. He is going to be a force. And he's going to be a force immediately.
He was a force last year.
That's right. He was with the Fargo Force.
Force.
Ah.
USHL, I believe he was either playoff MVP or season MVP. Very good goalie. And
it's from my Rams, right?
He's from your Rams,
too. He's from your Rams and your Huskies. He may be your favorite player ever.
He's up there.
And who do you get drafted by?
Coyotes.
Oh. Yeah.
Are they your Coyotes now?
No way, dude.
I thought I was going to
say. Glad he's Yotes.
Maybe he could get shipped to the Canucks.
There we go.
You know what? Just go to Columbus and then play in Syracuse for the crunch. God bless the Crunch. They need goaltending, that's for sure.
Carl Gehring's not there anymore?
It would be a lot better if he was. They would have made the playoffs, that's for sure. The goaltending was brutal. They had this guy penciled in named Steve Mason, but he ended up sticking.
He stuck with the big club.
Maybe heard of him. Have you heard of him winning the Calder Trophy?
Scouts were high on Gehring until they saw him get screened by Brian Gionta, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Classic story.
Yeah. Think about what Mason's goals against average would have been in the AHL compared. He was insanely low in Columbus, and I guess he would have had better people around him. But
yeah, but he was playing against better people too.
Yeah.
So.
I'm trying to think if there's any other surprises out of the draft.
Phil Kessel did not get traded.
Kieran Millan got taken by the Avalanche. That's a pretty good pick on the Avalanche parts, I think.
Yeah, that is a good pick.
Since they are goalie starved. Well, wait, they have Billy Sauer. Oh, no. Never mind. Scratch that. I was surprised that Danny Mattson didn't get picked.
Yeah, we had heard a lot about him going into the draft, too, and obviously has some very good potential. So that was a bit of a disappointment. Right.
North Dakota recruit.
He was a Ann Arbor kid, right?
I thought he played at Holy Angels.
No, maybe not. You know, I'll tell you what I was surprised by. A Minnesota recruit, Zach Budish out of Edina, right wing. I'm not surprised that he got picked, but to go for 41st overall to the Predators, the fact that he went that high surprised me a little bit just because he missed all of his senior year of hockey because he blew out his knee playing football. And you just never know how those things are going to heal and if you're going to fully recover physically and mentally from that. But obviously they think he's going to be okay.
Yeah, I thought he was going to go higher. I thought really? He was going to be, yeah. Yeah, I thought he was going to go higher.
I thought he was right where he should have been.
We're playing card sharks here all of a sudden. higher, lower, no.
But in the realm of guys we're excited to see, I'm interested to see him play because he sounds like obviously he's just a monster on skates.
Yeah.
So, I'll be interested to see him this fall as well.
Yeah, I had him 41st to Nashville in my mock draft.
Your mock.
He was right after Brian Hoyer.
Good to see the Coyotes take a chance on Chris Brown, too, after all of his legal troubles.
I was going to say that joke earlier.
Sorry, I couldn't resist.
And I had no comment.
Wait a minute, you're dating who?
Chris Brown, Michigan recruit, center, by the way. Not yeah, okay.
We got you.
Not
I know you got it. I was just, there may be one or two listeners out there.
Not the girl puncher.
Right.
He punches now like a girl.
You know who else could have been a good pick there? And I think he went something like 100th is Weidman, Chris Weidman from Miami.
Yeah.
I think he's got a lot of upside. You know, you look at a guy like Andy Green that came out of Miami, the same coaching staff, and now Weidman's playing on a better team. I think he had 25 or 30 assists last year.
Yeah.
Not saying that he should have been necessarily picked higher than that, but I thought it was that was a pretty savvy pick anyway for Ottawa.
Yeah, it was a good pick. I agree with that.
Yeah. The Western Michigan kid, by the way.
Yeah.
He went. You know, I saw him play last year. Once in person, and I think at least twice on TV. And he's not a bad player.
Yeah, no, he improved a lot as the year went on too.
Yes, he did.
Yeah,
yes, he did. That's a nice pick.
Canucks, baby.
And it's good for that program.
Time goal.
Yeah, that's right. And it's good for that program too. Obviously, to have a kid, you know, and that's something else that we were kind of. Gladdy and I, as we were following the draft on, more so on Saturday, obviously, when all the picks, we're just kind of riffing on, seeing these kids go, from Western Michigan, from Merrimack, from Yale. I guess Yale's really not that out of the ordinary, but, from
Alaska Anchorage.
Yeah. From Alaska Anchorage.
Yeah. Spencer Bennett, forward out of Surrey. Went to the Flames. Yeah.
So, and we didn't see, obviously no Michigan State kids taken.
New Hampshire late.
New Hampshire went late.
No Maine, I don't think.
No Maine. We said.
To be fair, a lot of that has to do with the kids that they're bringing in aren't draft eligible. They're targeting an older player. So.
As we learned from Ohio State.
Well, no, I mean, I knew that was part of the deal anyway. And
no.
That's why you don't see a lot of Ivies, because they're looking at some overagers.
Yep.
So.
You talked about LeBlanc saying, I'll go to Harvard for a year or two, and then we'll see what happens. You never see guys going to Air Force say that.
No.
I'll try it for a year or two. For some reason, they always stay 4 years.
You always, yeah. One other draft thing was North Dakota's guys kind of low on the totem pole. But they had the second rounder a year ago who will be on campus this year. I'm losing his name right now. Played on the World Junior team for States. From USC.
Christo?
Yeah, Danny Christo.
Danny Christo.
Yeah. So, we'll see what happens there. I think they'll probably finish 7th this year.
Why couldn't Danny Christo's parents name him Monty?
They're not cool.
I like it.
I think I've said that on a podcast before, but yeah. It just needs to be brought up again.
Yeah. I was going to say I loved all his performance art back in the 70s, but maybe that was a different Christo.
Indeed. I don't get that joke.
Old reference lost on young listeners, yes. Including me. I don't get it either.
Yeah. They have this cool thing called Wikipedia. Look up Christo sometime. See what comes up.
K-R-I-S-T-O?
I think it was C-H-R-I-S-T-O. Anyway.
Crisco? You're not talking about like the shortening, are you? Crisco?
I took an art class in college.
I took art at Minnesota Duluth.
Yeah, you had to.
I love it.
Draw a winky.
Exactly. That was a Letterman top 10 list years ago. It was the top 10 classes for athletes at like SMU or some football factory. One of them was draw a winky.
I remember that one. I think one of them was also subtraction, addition's tricky pal.
Right. And my personal favorite was sandwich making, and then it said final project required.
That is pretty funny. Well, we've fully immersed ourselves in deterioration.
We should probably touch on the
NHL.
Am I stealing your segue?
No, I got no segue.
Oh. Yeah, we should touch on the, since we're talking draft, we should also talk some free agency.
Yeah, some old friends of ours from the old college hockey days on the move.
Big day for Michigan.
Mike Camilleri.
Commissaric.
John Madden coming right to your backyard there.
Yeah, I like that move for Chicago.
Yeah, I do too.
I think it's a good one.
Well, and don't forget Mike Knuble.
Ah, yes.
Mike Knuble to the Washington Capitals.
Which obviously
probably the most fortuitous one for him, personally.
How's this pitch from GM George McPhee? Well, we're a little up against the cap, but we can play on a wing with Ovechkin and Backstrom. Sign here, please. So, yeah, that's all right.
I think that's one of the better moves of the day, I think.
Yeah, I like that move.
Is the Knuble signing. You know, he'll be good for that team.
I think the Sedin's got a very fair contract.
I think that's...
To both sides?
Yeah, I think that's one deal where you look at any...
Win-win.
Yeah, both... It's very, you know, both... Yeah, both sides end up getting what they deserve.
As free agents, you know, they've got to play the market. They've got to test it and see what's going on out there. Personally, I don't think they ever wanted to leave Vancouver.
No, I don't think so either.
So, I don't know.
I mean, and let's be honest, they're good players.
They're great. I mean, they're great.
I hate to admit that, but they are. Yeah.
So.
Canucks
lose a longtime defenseman, Matthias Olin, however.
Yeah, how does that move affect you? He went to Tampa Bay.
Olin went to the Lightning for like 4.5 years. It's a lot of cabbage for an older guy.
Yeah.
But have you seen Tampa's defense?
Yeah.
They got restricted free agent Noah Welch they got to sign.
Oh, jeez.
That's funny.
The other big college moves today, Gianta to the Habs.
Yeah, that was a good one. It's like, what, Heater to Edmonton, right? Is that what we're hearing?
Well, it's...
We're working on it. We're efforting.
Yeah, they're efforting.
To persuade him.
Yeah.
I don't see why. Well,
Dwayne Rollison to the Island.
Yep.
Yeah, that's an interesting
move.
He'll
be busy.
Yeah.
Yep.
Ty Conklin went to, don't tell me, St. Louis.
I was already telling you.
And Clemenson went to Florida.
Yeah.
Because Craig Anderson went to Colorado. I believe.
Yeah.
Now, just right as we were starting this,
hold on, yeah. Well, let's get back while we're on the Goldies. Dowd, what are the Blackhawks going to do? I know you like Huey better than some.
Yeah, I definitely like him better than some people do, and I think that some of his troubles last year were a symptom of he's stylistically different than Hobby Bull, and not necessarily worse, but different. And it took there were some adjustment periods of like the defenseman learning how to play in front of him because he gives up some different rebounds and, you know, just covers the net differently, and you could see that because some of the goals. And then you see a game like the final game against Detroit where he was brilliant. You know, they did their job for the most part until the overtime goal. But, you know, and they've got some good talent behind there as well. You know, they've got the Niemi guy, Antti Niemi, the Finnish guy. He's you know, he's decent. He's wasn't that impressive in his brief stint up in Chicago, but he had some good minor league numbers, and they seem to like him a lot. And then Corey Crawford has been great in his and well, if not great, at least you know, great by you know, by the standards of a one or two game stint up in Chicago.
Right.
So I think they've got some stuff there. Personally, I heard the rumors that they were going to trade Huey and re-sign Hobby Bullen. I don't know that I'd have given Hobby Bullen, you know, the years and the $5.5 million that he wanted at his age. So I guess it's what you had to do. So I got to think they're going to trade Brian Campbell or Huey at some point this season, depending on how well Crawford or Niemi steps in.
Well, they're going to have a hard time moving contracts. You know, Huey's moving that deal is the problem. That's the same with Teodor in Washington.
I don't see how they're going to how are they going to be able to move that Campbell contract?
Yeah, I mean,
I know they'd love to.
Yeah, and I think that's maybe my optimism. My optimism as a Blackhawks fan, but you know, I look at that and I see it, but you're starting to see some of the consequences already. Like, you know, we haven't heard anything on Chris Versteeg. It seems like I have an inkling that he's been getting some higher offers from other teams than they're going to be able to afford to give him. You know, but guys maybe they could unload are like Dustin Byfuglien's on, you know, $3 million a year. I think that up front they'll be okay. They've got more talent behind. They got Kyle Beach. They've got I may pronounce this wrong, but that Akeem Aliu guy. He was a bit crazy, but extremely talented. They got Skilly from Wisconsin, Jake Dowell, another Wisconsin guy. Those guys are pretty talented, but it's the back end where I'm worried. We've got Jordan Hendry, the Alaska kid, who actually was a forward for some of his time at UAF, but he, you know, he's been okay when he's gotten in there. But I just see them getting really thin on the back end, and I don't know what they're going to do. And I'm worried about losing Duncan Keith, especially, you know, he's going to be a tough one to re-sign because there's going to be a lot of people pursuing him.
And they got to take care of Kane and Taves.
Yeah.
Vladdy, Duncan Keith in a Canucks sweater.
I approve of that message.
Yeah.
I think the Canucks blue line could use a little more a little more toughness.
A little sandpaper.
Yeah. O'Brien was like the only guy who really, you know, was kind of mean to play against. I mean, Bieksa and Mitchell are gritty, but not, I don't think they intimidate in the same way, you know.
They're not commissaric.
Yeah, exactly. Or Brooks Orpik or somebody like that. So, you know, and then when you got Salo and Oland and, you know, those kinds of guys backed Edler. You can let Dustin Byfuglien stand next to Roberto Luongo for 2 weeks.
Now, is Byfuglien, is he restricted this year?
No, he's got another this coming year and the next year he's under contract. They signed him last year. He's $3 million a year through the 10-11 season. So,
wow.
He's a $3 million a year player?
Yeah, which was when, one of my best friends who we're kind of constantly taking a look at this stuff. When he signed that contract, we were just like, this has got to be the beginning of the end. I mean, Byfuglien during the playoffs, great, as you just mentioned, you know, standing next to Luongo, you know, he was really a driving force. Byfuglien during
standing
the regular
next
season.
Next to Luongo.
Well, he, you know,
standing on top of him.
He didn't pick up my sarcasm on that. But.
Yeah. And then, but you know what I mean? Like, you know, they needed that grit. And but during the regular season, he was invisible a lot of the time. So when we saw him get that $3 million contract, you know, it kind of raised some eyebrows and set a standard. And then you look at the contract Dave Bolin got, and I love Dave Bolin. He's really effective center. He wins a lot of faceoffs. He can penalty kill. He can play the quarterback on the power play. He's an all-around guy, but for that kind of money, then think about the standard that sets for Taves and Kane, and especially with Kane, I mean, I get the sense he's got a continually growing head too, and then maybe will have an inflated sense of what he's worth, and I think it might be really, really difficult to re-sign him. So
yeah, I think I would get that sense.
So, you know, we'll see what happens. Maybe they'll work some magic. I've heard that Scotty Bowman's kid, the assistant GM, Stan Bowman, is he's a former consultant, you know, financial type of guy. Granted, he worked for Arthur Andersen, who we remember was the Enron accounting firm. But
that's great. He's, yes, he's got no cap problems.
So, but you know, he's at least, you know, they've got a good brain behind there. Talon's a guy who's been around the game. We'll see what happens with him over time. But you've got Scotty Bowman and you know, his financial guru son. You got to think they'll find a way to make it work or find an alternative, you know.
James, you lost Martin Havlat, and in a related note, they laid off 6 members of the training staff and maybe fired the team doctor too.
I don't know. I'm not going to stand for any disparaging remarks on Marty Havlat on the Inch podcast.
Billy, that's out of bounds.
I love him.
You know what, though? I don't know if you guys – I actually follow him on Twitter, and it's been pretty interesting to watch this tonight. And just to give you a little rundown, you know, earlier today he said, you know, thanks to – or this was yesterday. Thanks to all my teammates. You're awesome. Sending me text messages. Wanted to know if it's done. You know, I really feel it from you guys. Thanks for your support. Then today – you didn't hear anything from him all day until about 40 minutes ago, and he said, you know, I'm excited to be in Minnesota where I was welcomed and appreciated by management. The real story about what happened in Chicago is to come out. And then, thanks to all the Hawks fans for love and support over the last 3 years, we'll never forget your generosity and the great playoff run. Host is a good friend, and I'm happy for him. And then 10 minutes later, in a very passive-aggressive move, puts in, there's something to be said for loyalty and honor, period.
He said, I like Chicago, but it's just not cold enough. So,
well, he's been saying for weeks too, you know, he was in Prague, you know, for the summer, obviously his hometown, took a trip for some vacation kind of thing. And then, I'm only thinking about coming to Chicago. I want to be in Chicago. I just want everybody to know I'm not selling my place there. And, you know, he seemed like he really wanted to be here, which is obviously something you look for, which is why it really took me by surprise. And I think that, you know, he, from what it sounds like, he was looking for a long-term deal, and they just weren't ready to give it to him, probably because some of those health concerns that Jess made light of there. Because you think about it, he's here for 3 years, and only this year was he really healthy the whole time. So you can understand why the front office might be skittish about giving him a long-term contract, but... I guess it's the reality of the game, you know. And
Chuck Fletcher wasn't, obviously, because reportedly he signed him to a 6-year deal.
I guess so.
What were the terms?
6 years.
6 year, $30 million, $5 a year.
What about the Gabrick era in Minnesota? Is now over, Jess. You saw that whole deal there. What's your take on?
He is surprisingly similar to Havlat. I mean, you know, could have owned this town if he was ever healthy for a full season, but just couldn't seem to string that together. And he did have a propensity. I mean, the biggest knock on him, other than the injuries, was he disappeared in the playoffs. And that's
what playoffs? I keyed.
Touche.
Well, exactly. That's why.
Well, you know what?
That's why it was one and done all those years.
Yeah. While we're talking Twitter, any folks on there? It was an incredibly useful tool today during the free agency, depending on whom you were following, which is how you use that thing. Anyone interested in following Inch? It's very hard. Yeah. Our Twitter username is Inch. So you can find us. There's also a link on our homepage. Always looking for fans. And it's a tool we certainly used a lot during the draft and the Frozen Four, and will continue to do so throughout the upcoming years. The latest and greatest newfangled thing is Twitter.
I was skeptical of Twitter, but I'll have to say that within the last probably since the Frozen Four, I've become a convert. It is actually a pretty cool tool as far as getting breaking news.
Yeah, it's like anything. It's what you make of it, you know. And I find, you know, that you have to keep control over it. And I don't know. That to me is kind of the deal.
You know, I was just going to say, I think it's a good, you look at some of the things that happened over the last couple of weeks, and obviously, as much as we make it out to be, I don't think the free agency was maybe as significant in the world as what was going on with what was happening with Twitter and the Iran election. But it shows, it can be, brilliant and dangerous in the same way if you don't, I think, Mike, you just said keep control of it, because I mean, people use the word viral when they're talking about spreading over social networking and social media, and it really is. You know, you think about the host of the Hawks thing came out of nowhere, and all of a sudden, everybody in Chicago knew about it. So,
and I'm sure as the season progresses, we'll figure out some ways for Twitter to be interactive.
Yeah, it has that capability.
Where you Twitter us. And
we can work with that.
And we'll figure it out.
Yeah, sounds good.
My boss at work today, I work with, internet and website and social media stuff, and one of his tweets today, this morning, was, as it was going into this, I wonder how long it'll be before social networking conditions are built into professional sports contracts.
Oh, I bet it's already happening.
Yeah, I mean, it is too.
I mean, you look at that. I was able to redo Martin Havlat's thoughts, he's a Redskins fan. He was telling me that some of the Redskins guys are on it, and it won't be long before something goes massively wrong.
I can't wait.
Speaking of the Redskins, Dan Steinberg got to meet him at the Frozen Four. He's a author of DC Sports Bog, which is a blog on the through the Washington Post, and Stein's a great dude, hilarious, captures the spirit of the thing for sure. He was absolutely killing Tony Romo today.
Yeah, I didn't
killing him all day.
I was kind of paying attention, but not really close. And what's the full story behind that? Because I wasn't. I know he was golfing.
Tiger Woods had a charity tournament at Congressional in Metro DC and played in the Pro-Am, and Tiger's partner in the tournament was Tony Romo. And I think Stein's probably thought it was in poor taste. I don't want to put words in his mouth for sure, but I think it was probably in poor taste to have the star Cowboys quarterback in Redskins country,
And playing with the host.
Yeah, so he was chirping about all the bandwagon fans of the Cowboys, and it was pretty funny.
Oh, okay. I'm in.
Yeah.
I like that.
Well, one of his tweets, I think, said, funny, Boston Red Sox and New York Yankee fans also like Dallas Cowboys.
They should have had Clinton Portis in golf with Tiger in one of his alter egos.
No, they should have had Fred Smoot.
Fred Smoot. Very nice.
So, anything else? Anybody? Summer? Baseball?
That's it.
That'll do it. All right. We'll wrap the Inch podcast. Thanks for stopping by to check in on college hockey with us and other assorted hockey topics and the Chicago.
And somebody poked Jess with a stick.
I'm awake, as far as I know.
All right. Just
get off of Twitter and get on the podcast.
I don't twit.
Yes.
I couldn't participate in that conversation because I have yet to be sold.
That's cool.
All right.
I'm a holdout. I'm a Luddite.
Yeah.
Wait until they get all the bugs worked out.
Yeah, good idea. The next big thing on the Inch calendar is, of course, our A to Z series, which will debut in a few weeks here as the calendar turns toward July, so be on the lookout for those. Of course, as you know, one player profile from each of the 58 teams in Division I college hockey, and that kind of brings us up toward the start of the season. So exciting times, and we'll probably throw together another podcast and another couple weeks or so. So for James V. Dowd and Jess Myers, along with Mike Idlewis, my name is Joe Gladyszewski. This has been the InsideCollegeHockey.com podcast.